Today, we're headed to the Windy City to catch a game in one of baseball's oldest parks, the only Major League ballpark designated a National Historic Landmark. It's Wrigley Field, home of the Cubs, on this week's episode of Ballpark Road Trip. This is Ballpark Road Trip. If you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. Well, you've come to the right place. Here on the show, we will be traveling around to each major league city, talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and we have a good one today. We're talking Wrigley Field. Now, this is a ballpark I've visited 3 times over the years, and I would not hesitate to go back. I've loved each time I've been, and I need to go and see those renovations that I've read about. Today, we'll be talking with Jeff Rogowskis of the Brick Behind the Ivy YouTube show. But first, let me tell you a little bit about my experiences going to Wrigley. I've moved across the country driving from California to the East Coast twice in my life, 10 years apart, once in 2003 after college, and then again for grad school in 2013. Both times, I stopped in Chicago and caught games at Wrigley. But if we are going to go in order, my first game would have been in late July 2003 against the San Francisco Giants, making it ballpark number 8 of the current MLB 30. But before we roll into Chicago, let's back up and recap the situation. As I mentioned in a previous episode, it was 2003, and I was moving to New York with my girlfriend straight out of college. I was driving by myself from Irvine, California, to Astoria, New York, and I was on my first ballpark road trip. I had already stopped in Kansas City for a couple games before heading to my next stop, St. Louis. We will have a whole episode on the current Busch Stadium, but when I went back in 2003, it was the old multi-purpose Busch. I will say, it was still great. My grandpa knew the GM of the Cardinals, Walt Jocketty, back when he was with the A's organization, and he helped me out getting tickets right behind home plate, close enough to hear the umpire and batters argue, and close enough that I could actually have an opinion on balls and strikes. Not like it ever stopped me when I happened to be in the third deck. Now, I won't spend too much time on Busch, mostly because this is a Cubs episode, but I will say, what I noticed the most, the main memory I have, was sitting in my seat with a family of 4 in front of me. Mom, dad, older son, younger daughter. And it was obvious they had watched the same episode of Baseball Tonight that I had watched in my hotel room the night before. They were all up on everything. Dad and mom and son and daughter, all talking, all knowledgeable baseball fans, not just about the Cardinals, but about the visiting Pittsburgh Pirates as well. But after a night and a game in St. Louis, it was time to head on to Chicago. Technically, Evanston, Illinois, where I was sleeping on a friend's sofa at Northwestern. But once there, I spent 4 days in Chicago. Later in the program, I'll talk more about what I did between games when we talk about Chicago recommendations. But in terms of Wrigley, I decided to go to 2 games, a night game in the grandstand and an afternoon in the bleachers. And you know, if you have the chance to do that, I think that's the right call. My first night, I sat in the last row of the second deck, the very top behind third base, and I still felt closer than at the Oakland Coliseum. Around the 6th inning, I was able to find a seat on the first base side, pretty close to the front of the second deck. Great view. Nothing bad about sitting in the second deck at Wrigley if you get a chance. The next day, I sat in the bleachers. I lined up and entered the ballpark when it opened, which I believe was like 10:30 in the morning, 11 o'clock, for a 12:30 game, I want to say. Anyway, it was a weekday afternoon, and I got a seat in left field behind Barry Bonds. The thing I remember the most about that day was that I saw a sign under the bleachers that said something like, "Please keep the friendly confines friendly. No bad language." Something like that. I always smile when I think about that sign. Kind of quaint. Kind of aspirational. Now, that doesn't mean that the fans weren't able to heckle Barry Bonds using a slur that rhymed with his first name. But yeah, no cursing that day. After the game, I walked around Wrigleyville and had some good Cajun food at a place called Heaven on Seven. I believe they're all closed down now. Maybe there's one still out there, but they had so many different hot sauces on the table. I came back and visited Wrigley again 10 years later as a part of my Coco and Yo-Yo Do America trip. In fact, as you probably have noticed, that's where we get the main picture for our podcast. But now it's time to get into things with our local. Let's get some recommendations for your trip to Clark and Addison.
Wrigley Field.
So with us on the program today is Jeff Candid Cubs Rogowskis. Jeff, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Oh, not too bad. Just trying to watch the Cub game this evening out here in the south side of Chicago and hoping for not another crushing one-run loss, but, you know, wishing one hand and crap in the other and tell me which one has things in it.
You host a show called Bricks Behind the Ivy, is that right?
Yes, I do. Something we started this past winter, heading into this season. It's a video and audio podcast on YouTube and wherever podcasts you listen to. And yeah, our moniker is For Cub Fans by Cub Fans.
Nice. Why don't we start from the beginning? Are you a season ticket holder, or do you get your tickets game to game?
I joined the season ticket holder ranks again this year. I was a season ticket holder from 2012 till about 2019. The change was my wife and I had our first child in 2016, shortly after the 2016 World Series championship. And we had a daughter in 2018, and really just season tickets for the Cubs traditionally have been very, very expensive. It's a very, very popular ticket. You being on in the Bay Area, I know that if I'm not mistaken, the Giants still do like leasing of seats, and you actually own the territory where your seat is located at the ballpark, which has some tax implications and how many times you can skip the seat. Not quite that at Wrigley. Wish they kind of did it that way to kind of feel a little more invested. But yeah, they just got rid of the season ticket holder waiting list in Chicago this past year, which is a pretty big change. A lot of that, I think, has to do with it's just different since 2016. The fan base is different. The feeling is different. Expectations have increased exponentially for this team, and the fan base feels that as well. And there hasn't been, I would say, like this type of success that fans have wanted. And there was the transition away from, you know, the 2016 core. And there's only one remaining player from the 2016 World Series team on the Cubs currently. It's Kyle Hendricks, who my son is actually named after.
Oh, fantastic. You know, you're the second guest I've had on this show who's named their son after a baseball player. We had a Baltimore fan name his son Brooks after Brooks Robinson. So, yeah, that's great. It shows a passion around the whole country. Let me know, what is the best way for people coming into town to get a ticket? Maybe they want a good seat. Are all those good seats mostly held by season ticket holders that they're going to have to go on the secondary market, or can you go through the team? What's the best way to get tickets at Wrigley?
You know, I think I would say the secondary market is still the best place to go, which isn't the answer a baseball fan is probably looking for. As
No. Baseball fans, baseball employees are not looking to give that, but baseball fans are more than happy to find the best way to get their ticket.
Yeah, it's really depending on the season as well. Like if you are a fan that is willing to kind of tough out or roll the dice of the early season Chicago weather, which can be pretty dicey, you can get a really good deal on a ticket if you want to be in the summer, like everyone in Chicago in the bleachers, you know, having a great time at a Cubs game, you're going to have to pay a pretty penny to do so, especially if you're going to want to sit in a group of probably four plus. That's going to be a little more challenging to find, and the cost of that is going to rise pretty significantly.
Have you always chosen the same seats or the same area, or have you moved around? Do you have a favorite place you like to sit in the ballpark?
It really depends on the type of fan in the ballpark. Wrigley Field is small in a very positive way, in which like the grandstand hangs over the field. So if you're in the second deck, you're not really missing much of the action. You're really right on top of it, which is a perk of some of the older ballparks. Some of the newer ballparks, their grandstands aren't built in the same way. So there, I personally believe there is not a bad seat at Wrigley, besides behind some of the, there's some concrete poles for, you know, for structural purposes that there are, they're clearly labeled on the tickets. It is required by Wrigley Field and the city of Chicago to label if your seat is right behind one of these poles, which there are, if you look online, there are some comical seat locations that are directly behind a pole and you would have to kind of sit like I just did to see the game. But I would say that if you like, if you want to be centered, you want to be in like the 212, the 217 section, which is right under the grandstand. You got some shade, and they've opened up the back of that under the marquee. So there's a nice cool breeze in the summer, even when it's hot. But if you want to get a good look at fly balls, you want to be in the 300, 400 section on the first or third base side. And if you want to see what Cub bleacher bums are all about, you want to be in the bleachers. It's it is a different atmosphere in the bleachers. They have fun, you know, but, and I'm not going to necessarily suggest you take a family of four to the bleachers.
But, I was going to ask, because when I went, and maybe the sign is gone, but when I went, I remember a sign saying, please keep the friendly confines friendly and watch your foul language in still the there. Bleachers. Yes, I don't know if that is followed or not, but you don't think that you would feel comfortable with your daughter or your son or your little kid there.
One thing that's very special about Wrigley is the bleacher folk, you know, the bleacher bums, as they're traditionally known. There's some, I would say, you know, quasi celebrity to celebrity personalities out there. And a lot of them in my time as a Cub fan are extremely welcoming and especially kind to kids and people kind of absorbing. There's a lot of the traditional what you want to see. If it's the Cubs hitting the home run, a home run ball caught and handed off to a kid, like there's that type of behavior going on, which is what you want to see in a ball game. But yeah, if that's a road team hitting a home run, you better be prepared to throw it back and maybe some, you know, ball switchery trickery, as we've seen in the past. If the ball in your pocket, you throw on and you keep the one that was hit.
I wasn't going to ask this now, but since you brought it up, I might as well jump right to this. Can a visiting fan feel comfortable wearing their jersey or their colors at Wrigley?
I think it depends on what kind of visiting fan you are. I think that, you know, Cubs Cardinals over the years has been a pretty heated rivalry. I don't know if White Sox Cubs is really the same. I would say that it would be less smart to wear a Cubs jersey to a White Sox game, but wearing a Sox jersey to a Cubs game is not going to bring the same type of ire. Besides that, I would say that you're in a pretty good spot, you know, wearing a different team's jersey to the ballpark. I think that a lot of people who do these types of trips are probably pretty comfortable wearing their team's colors to a ballpark. You know, I generally, when I travel, I'm someone who's very interested in this as well and go to other ballparks. I have in the past, like, tried to choose around the All-Star game. So it's kind of more of like, you're going to find someone that's like you, or at least you're wearing a conversational piece. But if, you know, if it's a team, if I'm going to a ballpark for the first time, there's two teams playing and I don't have a jersey for either team, I tend to try to buy a hat while I'm there and just wear whatever.
So how about getting to the game? How do you get to the game usually? Do you live in the area? Do you drive, take public transportation? What do you do?
I've done it all. You know, when I was in high school and went with friends, you know, we actually used to kind of park outside the city. So there is the Orange Line, which is connects to Midway Airport for those traveling into the city, can take you to a connecting train that can get you on the Red Line up the Wrigley. And it's not too difficult to do. There's lots of signs. And generally, too, when you're on public transit, you're going to know you're going the right direction because there's going to be a ton of Cubs jerseys. The Cubs do draw. And Cub fans will help out if you're asking, you know, when where to go. So public transit is a pretty solid option. I've taken, you know, from, I live in the south suburbs of Chicago, so I take Metro, which is a little bit, it's not like, you know, city, you know, CTA type lines. It's the suburban train routes and such. And there's a few options from the suburbs that kind of get you in the heart of the city. Some of the Rock Island service and the BNSF, which is one of the Western train lines, can get you from some of the more affluent suburbs around the Chicago area and get you kind of right where you need to hop onto another train. So that's a pretty solid option as well. And I've driven, you know, it is a ballpark, for those who don't know, that is in the middle of a city neighborhood. It's a very bizarre experience compared to a lot of other ballparks in the country that seem to be kind of on their own lot, their own land. So there, it is going to be very expensive because it's going to be city parking prices around the demand of only 40,000 seats.
Right.
And getting in, depending on how long you want to be in the neighborhood as well, is going to change whether or not you want to drive. You know, as rideshare apps have gotten more popular, Wrigley has gotten a lot better and efficient about like rideshare zones. So there's a few blocks outside of Wrigley and it's marked inside each of the apps in Lyft and Uber, and no free ads for those different ride sharing applications. There's streets that are marked in the apps that say you're coming from a Cub game and you can go meet. There's usually like a pool of these folks. And then there's also taxi drivers usually there knowing where the Uber pools or the rideshare pools are at.
So it sounds, if you don't want to do public transportation, that's going to be pretty easy for you to do your first time that you check it out. I mean, in terms of the rideshares and whatnot. So that's great. All right, cool. So you get to the game and maybe people do want to hang out in the neighborhood beforehand. They've heard so much about Wrigleyville. Do you have any spots that you recommend or any that you would stay away from because maybe they're too touristy, or any special places that you like that you actually think is really cool and maybe off the beaten path?
I think, you know, Wrigleyville itself is kind of an experience. And, you know, I think depending on the Cub fan you talk to and how long they follow the team and, you know, how often they went to different games and such, that answer is going to change. And so I'm going to try to give as broad of an answer as possible.
Cool.
And I'm going to try not to like get on my little soapbox here, but when the Ricketts family bought the Cubs, they did buy a lot of the surrounding property and have changed the neighborhood pretty significantly. And some will say for the worse, some will say for the better, and some will kind of be in the middle. The buildings are a lot more modern. You know, the city of Chicago has obviously been around a very long time. Thanks to Mrs. O'Leary's cow, it's a little bit newer than some of the modern constructed cities, but not crazy new. But Wrigleyville,
San Francisco's in 1906. That's when everything was destroyed and redone. So
it's like Chicago did get the luxury of, you know, of being able to kind of design in a very well established grid system, and you know, Wrigleyville is easy to get around because of that, because, you know, finding different streets and such. But yeah, when you get on Clark and Addison, the two intersections of where Wrigley Field is at, you know, it is a different feel. It's the restaurants and stuff has switched. There are a lot more, I would say, like, I don't know if mom pop's the correct word, but like non-franchise, non-like, you know, national branded like names, where now it's not necessarily that, like, they have, you know, some more popular trendy restaurants in the area. They still have McDonald's. There used to be, for a very long time, right across from Wrigley Field, like a regular looking McDonald's that was half a parking lot for the game and then half a place to go to eat while you waited for people to move out of the way of your car so you could leave the game like that. And I used to go to a spot that's not there any longer, but there is still a location in the city. So still, if you're in the area, worth checking out, not too far from Wrigley Field, there's Goose Island Brewery, which is probably more nationally known now because of their Coors distribution partnership. They Goose Island is something I think that is 312. That beer specifically is, and Matilda is another one I think that gets distributed nationally from Coors. But they used to serve a beer there called the Cubby Blue, which was a blueberry wheat. And I don't know if my memory is serving me incorrectly or if it was just the magic of the place, but I do remember it towards opening day being the color blue. It was dyed like similar to St. Patrick's Day having a green
Oh, yeah.
beer, and in Wrigleyville you have a blue beer. So that was a memory I held pretty strongly with going to games, but that is long gone. It's not it, but there are a lot of the time old establishments that Cub fans really, and Murphy's Bleachers probably being the one that comes to the mind, that is right off of Sheffield and Waveland, which is behind the outfield walls of the ballpark, and a really good spot that a lot of Cub fans go to. There's the Cubby Bear, which is right across the street from the famous marquee at Wrigleyville and Clark and Addison. That's a good spot to check out. And then around there's just a lot more restaurants and businesses that are, quite a bit newer to the neighborhood, not discounting their quality or anything. It is a very different feel. And I think that, Clark and Addison, to me, the only thing that really hasn't changed is probably like the Cubs souvenir shops. Like that's where I would go if you're not going to looking to buy stuff inside the ballpark. There's Sports World, which is right across the street from the field, which is pretty solid, but my favorite shop is off the Red Line, a little bit further down Clark Street. It's Wrigleyville Sports. They've been there since 1989. Family-run business, like all the Cubs souvenirs you can think of. So those are the things that I think of Wrigleyville more than the restaurants now, is just where I'm going to stop to get the Cub hat I don't need, which like I don't need anymore, but.
Are those stores outside Wrigleyville, or sorry, outside of Wrigley, better prices than getting your stuff in the ballpark, or is it kind of similar inside and outside?
I think there's more of a variety is
Gotcha.
how I would. There's a Cub store now in Gallagher Way, which we can talk about. That's a new like kind of open space that is technically a ticketed area of the ballpark, and the Cubs official store sits on Gallagher Way now. Both of these places outside are going to be cheaper than the Cub store. And honestly, one of the perks of especially Wrigleyville Sports, if you're going there and you're a person who likes to collect maybe jerseys, they'll personalize a jersey before you leave the store. Like they're very, very
Oh, great.
fast. And
Oh, cool.
then so like that's a great service, because then if it's your first time at a Cub game, you want to get your name or there's some player attached to and they don't have in the store, like that's to me is more Wrigleyville than anything. It's like kind of getting kind of baptized as a Cub fan with a
Oh,
customized jersey.
that's great. Well, then let's get into Gallagher Way, as you said. That is that area, the kind of new renovated area outside of Wrigley's third base side. Is that the area that we're talking about?
Correct. Yes.
So
And
what you said,
it's
that's a ticketed area. Tell me about that. You have to go into that the stadium before you can access that area.
so you can technically go into the stadium by going into that area. So like that could be the first place you go in, which is a little different. At least it feels very different to me.
Well, let's continue with the renovation. Have you been happy with the renovation so far? What are your thoughts on the ballpark post this recent 3-year renovation?
I think they did a pretty amazing job, in all honesty. I had, apprehensions, as a lot of Cub fans did, with some of the changes, but it's a ballpark that's over 100 years old that didn't have some of the, simple amenities that a lot of other ballparks have. And, they had some challenges, presented to them. One of the biggest, and, some folks think this kind of fueled their run to the World Series and such, was, their clubhouse was embarrassing for a really long time. They used to have like a little tiny replay TV and a net for pinch hitters to warm up in the home club, the dugout, a clubhouse. And that's now it's this, they built down under Wrigley, and that building that's in Gallagher Way is actually where that connects. So the players in the clubhouse is way under Wrigley Field now. And they've moved all the administrative folks, the front office folks, in that giant building on Gallagher Way, where before they were all in extremely small offices inside of Wrigley, which is hard to imagine going into Wrigley now that there was also a bunch of people working inside of there while there were also games, because there just doesn't feel like there'd be enough room. But I always, I tell folks that haven't gone, that are Cub fans who haven't been there in a while, that it's like someone with a whole bunch of money that loves the thing that you love just as much as you do, spent as much money as I could to make sure it feels the exact way as you remember it. And I think that's one of the biggest compliments I can give it. There's just a classic feel to it, but it's very clearly all modernly redone. A great example is like right when you walk in under the marquee and all of the individual like food stands and stuff in the concourse, like have all been redone with like tin outlinings and fresh neon. So it looks like something that you would, if you could take a color photo of the early 70s and late 60s of what it looked like in there, it's what your brain would tell you it looked like, but clearly it's like, it's brand new. It's brand spanking new. Great. It's shiny. And I don't know how they tap dance that line of modernizing everything while making it feel old. And minor features that I think kind of have gone slightly unnoticed to some folks, like when you walk up on Clark and Addison and you see Wrigley for the first time, there's two features of like the original ballpark back when it opened, long before many of us. They had like wainscoting roof tiles on top of the ticket box offices, and they've returned those, and I think it really adds a really nice kind of vintage touch to it. And there is some right behind the marquee, it's opened up now, but it used to just be a concrete wall. And before it was a concrete wall, it was actually very like old iron gating. So I used to be able to like look out from behind the marquee and see onto the street when Wrigley was a lot older. And they restored the original iron gating and like colored it the appropriate, you know, Wrigley green that you see all over my basement and all over Cub fan stuff. That so it's got that, you know, kind of that classic feel. And it's the original gating from all those years ago. So it's, they've just done a really good job of, instead of choosing to replace something, they've restored it to like the best version of itself.
Nice. A couple of questions about the renovation. Number one, nowadays social spaces are all the rage. Are there any social spaces in Wrigley Field that people can go if they're not sitting in their seat, or is it really a small seating bowl only kind of area?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of social spaces now in Wrigley, which I think was one of my biggest concerns. There's the 1900 Club right behind home plate, which takes a special ticket, but the ticket gets you to different, like there are different seats assigned near home plate. It's not like that section like you see on TV where there's folks like not sitting in the seats because they're like inside or whatever, getting their food at different ballparks. Right. Like this is a section that is behind home plate and under home plate, and it's set up like an old 1900 speakeasy. Like everything inside of it is themed to not only the 1900s in the theme of like the glasses and the imagery, but it's also all the 1900 branding for the Chicago Cubs. So like it is like walking into a different era in the how the room is set up, which is pretty cool. You know, there's a few other places around the ballpark that have more bars and stuff to stand and watch with some TVs set up, which is a little newer to me. You don't see a lot of people propagate in those areas. The box suites as well, you know, they're actually a little more closed off than they used to be. You used to be able to see the entrances to the box suite if you sat like in the 200s on like the main level, because like there was like a gate and then like all the doors of the box suites. But now they've closed that off, so there's a little more of a private entrance. Which in a weird way, like I used to sit in section 217 when I was 216, sorry, when I had season tickets the first time, and I used to be right under the main box suite for whoever was doing the seventh inning stretch. Like it was clearly that box. So like we used to see whoever, like sometimes it was Jeff Carlin, you know, that way probably knows from Curb Your Enthusiasm. We all know him as a jolly Cub fan this way. Other times it was, you know, players in the Bulls and stuff. And I remember when the Cubs were really bad, Joakim Noah was there and was bored and was just like talking to us. He's like, "Are the hot dogs good?" Like shouting down to us. We're like, "Yeah, they're not bad." Like it's just like Cubs were getting spanked and there were like 28 people there.
Well, since you're talking about that, we talk a little bit about different traditions and different in between inning events that happen. What are the things that people should know about at Wrigley? Any traditions, any songs to know, anything they should be prepared to do?
I think seventh inning stretch is probably the one thing, and that's a Bill Veeckman, promoter, famous Chicago sports promoter who came up with that idea and just kind of handed a mic to a drunk Harry Caray in the late 80s. And here we are, 40 years later, still doing this thing. And they've really reined it in honesty, which, like, I think feels appropriate. It felt like it was any celebrity who raised their hand, like, at one point in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's gotten some of the even now, like, trendy, like, social media clips of, like, Ozzy Osbourne not knowing the words. And
Right.
people are like, "What are you doing here in a Cubs jersey?" Now it's specifically, you have to have, like, a very easy to find Chicago connection, or, like, very rarely it seems like they've, like, found a celebrity that's filmed something in Chicago. But, like, even that has slowed down. It's a lot of local college teams, coaches, and Chicago-based actors, and that's very Chicago type people. And if it's not, the seventh inning stretch is now led by some classic videos of Harry doing the stretch on the new video boards. And sometimes, depending on the year and the day, if it's it happens to be around, like, one of the Cubs retired numbers players, birthday or something like that, or they're when they retired the numbers, they're the ones leading the stretch on the board if they're no longer with us. Like, Ron Santo is one that comes to mind. Like, he has one on the board. I'm sure the Cubs are playing Sunday Night Baseball this coming weekend, and it's Ryne Sandberg Day for two reasons. The Great Sandberg Game on June 23rd, I believe 1984, and then June 23rd, because his number was always 23, they're unveiling his statue on Sunday, which was a little bit of scuttlebutt in the Wrigleyville faithful, because there's nothing harder to get than a Cubs gate giveaway. You have to have perseverance, and knowing that the ballpark opens about 2.5 hours before game time, so you better be in line 2.5 hours before the 2.5 hours if you want to
That's
get a bobblehead at Wrigley Field.
No, that's good advice, 'cause some people do like to coordinate their visits around something special like that. Do you guys do fireworks nights or any other kind of special kids run the bases on Sundays or any other things that people might want to plan their trip around?
No, not, the fireworks is not something that regularly happens, in Wrigley. I've not ever seen fireworks actually at Wrigley Field. And
Oh,
so if there are
interesting.
some, I would not be aware of any post-game fireworks that have happened. I think a lot of that has to do with, because the ballpark's in a neighborhood, like, the fact that the Cubs have, they have more night games than I ever remember, because of, they have to negotiate that with the neighborhood and the alderman of Chicago to get special permission to even, Chicago's, the Cubs are one of the few teams that play as many day games as they do. So I would
I
assume
always
that.
thought when I was growing up that that was just because they didn't have lights, and then they got lights and they still played many day games. And you're telling me that's because of the neighborhood and more the noise and the
Yeah,
people.
no. So it's shifted dramatically, but I believe the neighborhood, and this is, I'm not the right person to ask, but the neighborhood used to, levy some pretty extreme rules to the Cubs about how many night games they could have. There was a shift, I want to say it was, like, in the early 2000s, in which they kind of finally caved. I don't know if they must have lost some leverage, because, yeah, traditionally the day games are Wrigley. Yes, long associated to August 8th, 1988, the first night game at Wrigley Field. And but yeah, no, it has a lot to do with the neighborhood. And it's there are so many videos online of, if the Cubs win, at 10 o'clock at night on a Tuesday in April, like, you can hear "Go Cubs, go!" like several city blocks away, and see the lights from Wrigley Field.
Yeah. How long have you guys been doing Go Cubs Go? I know it got famous in the 2016 World Series. Was that your first year using that song, or had you guys been using that before?
I don't know when it started after games. I was aware of the song much earlier than that. The song is not new. There was a, if this tells you, like, how old the song is, there was a Cubs, like, themed CD that they sold. There was, like, some team-based CDs from, like, LMB Media. And I remember buying it as a kid, and I'm dating myself officially. I'm 35 in a few weeks. And I think I had this thing when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I remember hearing Go Cubs Go on there and think it was the weirdest song I'd ever heard that someone had specifically written. And then next thing I know, they started playing it after. And, you know, the lyrics themselves too have, you know, dates the team, because some of the lyrics include like the WGN, like you can catch them all on WGN. The Cubs haven't
done
right.
WGN yeah.
in a very long time. So like, yeah. People have always joked like, are they going to change the lyrics? And like, I don't think anyone cares enough. And really,
no, that's part of the fun of the song.
Yeah.
I think for us older people who grew up watching the Cubs on WGN, that's a fun little timestamp. We've been having a nice conversation about Wrigley, kind of touching on a bunch of different topics. One thing we haven't talked about, which I usually talk about right off the bat, is food. What's your deal with food? Are you a traditional hot dog kind of person, popcorn, traditional ballpark snacks? Do you like trying the new things that they bring into the ballpark every year, or do you bring your own food to save a little money?
You know, over the years that has shifted a little bit. I used to bring my own food a lot. And yeah, a lot of it just like I was going a lot when we had season tickets early. I didn't have kids and the team was bad. So it's either you gave them away or you put a $20 bill on the ticket and hope somebody took it, or you went yourself. And we chose to go ourselves a lot. And there was a Subway down the street from Wrigley that, you know, you just buy, you know, a 12-inch sub. I think it was like some twofer deal. And my wife and I would get 6 inches apiece. And that was how we would spend the game. And, you know, then whatever money in my brain I saved, I bought souvenirs, which, you know, the math doesn't work out, but in my brain it did at the time. I'm not going to tell everyone that I do math for a living, which I do. I'm not a big food person. I have never, you know, I'm a very picky eater outside of a ballpark. When I go to Wrigley, it is about like a steamed hot dog, you know, and a little moist bun and a warm summer day. But like I might get shunned from Chicago after this. Like, I'm not a Chicago hot dog person. Like, I don't like a lot of stuff on a hot dog. Like, if you're going to Wrigley Field, I feel like if you want to try something Chicago-y, like, you do have to get a Chicago hot dog. Like, that is probably something I feel like a lot of folks would recommend. If we go to Wrigley, I would say, like, it used to be about the food around Wrigley to me. Like, it was the restaurants around Wrigley. It was, you know, the bars and the food around there. There was like different pizza places, or, you know, there used to be discounts. This is even dating myself a little bit more, like before games, if you went like 2 hours before the games, and the restaurants gave like 15-20% off. So like, that was a majority of my time food wise was food outside of Wrigley. Like, inside the ballpark, it's changed a lot. They've had like featured Chicago chefs some years that like have one or two items that they'll, you know, hawk off, or, you know, like they'll be like have some sort of theme to it each year. They've tried a bunch of different things. I don't think it's bad food. There's nothing bad about the ballpark food. I've been to ballparks where, you know, food is not great, but like, I don't think people, at least in my opinion, are going to a Cubs game and are like, this is the food item you absolutely have to have. It is run of the mill ballpark food that, you know, is above average. And, you know, it depends on how you feel about spending that type of money on food.
I got two final questions for you sure. that I ask most, if not all of my guests. First, let's say a visitor has one weekend in Chicago and they can maybe go to one game. Would you recommend a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday? And the caveat here is I usually say a Friday night game, a Saturday, it's different for each team, or a Sunday day game. So what do you guys have in Chicago?
It's tough. It really depends on the weekend. I think night games at Wrigley are really cool because there's a mystique to them because they feel so rare still. You know, they don't feel like they're run of the mill. You know, obviously, like on a Monday, Tuesday, most, if a series starting at Wrigley on Monday, Tuesday, similar to the Giants series right now, it's going to be Monday, Tuesday night game, and then Wednesday is a 1:20 start. Friday 1:20 is a staple. Like, we have a t-shirt company in Wrigleyville, Obvious Shirts. like Friday 120 is one of their big shirt sellers. You know, it's, it's so synonymous with the Cubs as a Friday 120 game, and the bleachers is good fun. Saturday is probably, you're going to get your biggest crowd, you know, in the summer, folks are going to probably take off on a Friday to go to a Friday 120 game, but you're going to see a lot. You're probably going to see a little bit more, like some work events and stuff like that. And, you know, a week game, especially during the summer, but like Saturday, you're going to get your big crowds. Sunday, you're going to get your big crowds of folks coming in to see the Cubs.
And I guess my final question for you before I let you go, you've seen the ballpark pre-renovation, you've seen the neighborhood change. With all the changes, still, what is your favorite part of Wrigley Field?
Ivy. My podcast is cleverly called Bricks Behind the Ivy, because we like to try to find the hard stuff, you know, behind the ivy. That's one thing I think when you're watching a baseball game at Wrigley Field, you do not really, there is no padding. It doesn't go ivy padding brick wall at Wrigley. It is ivy brick wall. So when you're watching an outfielder at Wrigley and it's the middle of the summer, you can easily forget that they are running solidly into brick, like if they're trying to go after a ball. But there are a few things on this planet that my eyes have seen as beautiful as midsummer Wrigley Field ivy. That I think there is a moment that every Cub fan probably feels the same way and would describe it very differently because it's so personal, but it would feel the same way to a passerby. You walk in under that marquee, you know, the main entrance of the ballpark, you walk right behind home plate, and like you see like the light of that stairway tunnel, and like you see the field for the first time after a long winter, and you see that ivy, and all you see is the hand operated scoreboard, the brick walls, the ivy, like the sea of green, whether it's the seats or the ball field. And you feel simultaneously old and like you're seven, like you're seeing the game for the first time. And you know, I have videos of my phone of almost every year I've gone to Wrigley, and I don't purposely do it, but like just like trying to like recapture, like taping like myself just holding my phone and like walking up those stairs, and I always hear the same sound of like this exasperation, like healing, nature's healing when I see it. But like the video feels like nothing. There's not the magic of like being at the ballpark and the hum of the people and like seeing those things. Like that is my favorite feeling, one that I chase every winter as we get feet and feet of snow in Chicago. I know there is a lukewarm beer, an average hot dog, and some of the best views in one of the oldest ballparks in the country waiting for me in the summer.
Jeff, thank you very much for talking with us. This has been a great joy talking to a diehard Cubs fan and someone who knows the stadium as well as you. So thank you very much. It's been really a great conversation.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it whenever. And if you want to circle my way on Twitter, I'm at Candid Cubs. And if you want to know more about the ball club, check me out on YouTube or on Twitter at Bricks Behind the Ivy or at @BBTI_pod.
Fantastic. Will do. All right. So I like to talk about other things you can do while you're in town seeing a game. Give a recommendation or two. Now, Chicago is a big place with plenty to see and do, and we all have our different tastes. So we are going to come back and talk about Guaranteed Rate Field in a later episode. So maybe I'll talk to you about some of the bigger and more famous attractions then. But for this recommendation, I want to take you back to my 2003 trip. I've always been a big comedy fan. I've done improv since high school, and I did it all through college. So when I was traveling through Chicago, I had to stop at their famous comedy theaters. For me, that meant Second City and Improv Olympic. I went to Second City first, and that's what I was excited the most about. That's where many famous comedians got their start. Comedians like Bill Murray, Stephen Colbert, Steve Carell, Tina Fey. The show was okay. I don't remember any of the performers, and the sketches were amusing, I guess. But the next night, I went to Improv Olympic, or IO as it's called, to see long form improv, and I was blown away. I had never seen anything like it. All I knew about improv was what I saw on Whose Line Is It Anyways? But there was this group that I saw, the second of two groups called Baby Wants Candy, who performed an entire improvised musical from beginning to end. They had all made up songs, made up choreography that they all did together, and an ending that tied everything together. I was so impressed. And so now today, 20 years later, I teach musical improv around the world and have played piano for many improvised musicals. It's something I love to do and something that I discovered on this ballpark trip. I'll leave a link in the episode description in case you need something else to listen to on your drive to Chicago after this podcast is over. But I totally recommend a show at Improv Olympic. That's what I recommend. If you come to Chicago, go see a show at IO. They are great and they've developed plenty of comedic talent themselves. You know, people from Amy Poehler to Bill Hader to Jason Sudeikis and Jordan Peele. So yeah, go to your Friday day game at Wrigley and check out a show at IO that night. You'll be glad you did. All right, that's our show for this week. Join us next week as we continue our ballpark journey across America. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying, join us next week as we continue our ballpark journey across America. See you then.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.